Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Representative Chrissy Houlihan's Voter Services Town Hall. This is our 67th town hall. My name is Aubrey, and I work for Chrissy here at home in Pennsylvania and down in Washington. During tonight's telephone town hall, Chrissy will introduce our guest speakers to talk about state and local voter services. If you'd like to ask a question of Chrissy or any of our guests, please press star three, and you will be connected with one of my colleagues in Westchester, Reading, or Washington, D.C. Again, I also see a number of folks tuning in through our website. As you submit your questions there, please include your first and last name and town. If you're listening through on dialing on the phone, again, that is star three to ask your question. Chrissy serves on the House Armed Services Committee, the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and the House Small Business Committee. Our agenda this evening includes opening remarks from Representative Houlihan, introductions for our panelists. Chrissy will then ask our panelists the questions we have been hearing the most, and after which we will move to our live question and answer period, including online questions, which I already see coming through. As a reminder, this is a nonpartisan official event, and because of health ethics, we are not able to engage in questions related to specific campaigns or candidates. Tonight's conversation will focus solely on the resources Pennsylvanians may need to vote. And with that, I'm proud to introduce our community's United States Representative, Chrissy Houlihan.
Thank you, Aubrey. Can you hear me okay? Just making sure.
Yes, I can hear you.
Terrific. And welcome, everyone, to our 67th town hall, which equates roughly to one town hall every 3 weeks or so since I first began serving as our representative down in Washington, D.C. Whether in person or on telephone, I'm grateful for the opportunity, for the chance to talk to you again. For those of you who have attended our telephone town halls before, I welcome you back. But if it's your first time, I will remind you, just as Aubrey did, that if you have a question, please hit star three to ask that question. We have also noticed a really significant increase in online callers when we have town halls during this time frame. And maybe that's because people are managing to call in during the dinner hour as they prepare. And as a mom, I definitely understand that as well. So if that is your case, please be sure, if you're online, to include your first and your last name and town when you're submitting an online question. And again, if you have a regular question, star three if you're on the phone. This is really, really important because if for some reason we can't answer your question during the town hall, we will be giving you a call back in the coming days. Some of you might recall that we have planned our town halls historically around very specific concerns, the concerns that we are hearing most about in our community, and particularly timely concerns. And so over the last few weeks, we've definitely seen a rise in calls and in emails and in general outreach to our office concerning what we would call voter services. As Aubrey said, I really want to be very, very clear at the start. If you, for whatever reason, have joined this call this evening and expect to hear some partisan information, I'm afraid to say that you will be disappointed. And for those who have attended our last telephone town hall on constituent services, as an example, you heard us then talking about securing veterans' benefits or addressing Social Security concerns or scheduling passport appointments and so much more. So in the same way that we help constituents with those federal agencies, regardless of political affiliation or ideology or leanings, we also hold that same very high standard when it comes to sharing information with you on yet another government service, that of voting. So as very good stewards of our really cherished republic, it is my job and my team's job and our civic duty to make sure that every eligible Pennsylvanian has the information that they feel they need to be able to vote, regardless of how they intend to cast their ballot. Many people know that growing up, I watched my parents, one Republican and one Democrat, go to the polls together, vote together, and then return home to dinner together. And I know that there are very many similar households here in our very purple district. I only have to drive around my own neighborhood to see that. And each household is very welcome and invited to reach out so that we can address any concerns that they might have. I am, of course, in the position that I hold, best able to speak on this telephone town hall for things at the federal level. So before I introduce our guests, I'll talk a little bit about the recent legislation that's ongoing at Congress that relates to voting at the federal level. But first, I do want to thank our guest panelists for joining us this evening. As Pennsylvania Secretary of State, Lee Chapman is able to address laws that are specifically impacting Pennsylvanians, of course, as compared to other states and commonwealths around the country. Then continuing to more local election services, so to speak, we have different regulations that affect each county as well. So voters in Berks and Chester counties, which are all part of the 6th Congressional District, might actually have different or slightly different ways of handling their elections as well. And that's why we're honored to have Karen Barsom here from the Voter Services of Chester County. Unfortunately, Berks County, which is, of course, also part of the 6th, does not currently have a director of voter services, so we were not able to invite him or her. But we will certainly share resources to address concerns from our community members who are in Berks as well. Getting back to legislation at the federal level that might impact Pennsylvanians and, in fact, all Americans, there are a couple of quick topics I'd love to give an update on. The first one regards the Electoral Count Act, which is an act that was first passed in 1877, and this piece of legislation addresses the counting of electoral votes through a joint session in Congress. And in the past year, there have clearly been some ambiguities in this legislation, and those have become under renewed scrutiny. And there is a bipartisan effort, both in the House and in the Senate, to make sure that we can clarify rules regarding the process of counting electoral votes. And I'm very hopeful that we might indeed be able to agree on something, both through the House and the Senate, in a bipartisan manner between now and the new year. I also want to make sure I cover quickly the Freedom to Vote Act, which we recently passed in the House of Representatives, and it's named after our late Representative John Lewis. This bill was designed to make voting and access to voting for all eligible voters a little bit easier, and these are things such as a day off to vote or expanded hours, and those are just some of the kind of items that are in this particular piece of legislation that is not yet a law because it has not been taken up by the Senate. And lastly, I'd like to cover a piece of legislation that was my own piece of legislation that the House passed. It's called the Stop Supporting Foreign Interference in Our Democracy Act, which was passed within another larger piece of legislation. This bill would explicitly prohibit a U.S. citizen from knowingly providing any foreign person or organization substantial assistance to make an illegal contribution to an American campaign. And I'm sure we can all appreciate, no matter who we are, why it wouldn't be appropriate or, frankly, legal for that to be done. So with that being said, there is not substantial bipartisan agreement at the federal level on how exactly to improve and to secure our elections. And that, frankly, saddens me, and I'm continuing to work on this. Voting is not a bipartisan issue, and I will continue to work with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle and with the House and the Senate to address the needs of the American people and the citizens of Pennsylvania when it comes to our voter services. And I really hope that we will be able to find a common ground. So I'll end my portion of this overview with this comment. At a recent town hall, I had a member of our audience raise their hands, and their comment really has stayed with me. She was a constituent who raised her hand, and she said that she really didn't believe any longer in the integrity of our elections. And what happened next was really very cool and very remarkable, because other community members who were in the audience, who have volunteered at polling locations, raised their hands or their voices, and they addressed her, and they talked through her concerns. The fact of the matter is that we are an enormously civic-minded and engaged community here in Chester and Berks counties, and we really obviously value the constitutional right to vote. So while there are very good faith conversations that happen every day about improving our voter services, a conversation that I'm really glad that we're also having both at that town hall and hopefully this evening is to say that our election officials are really dedicated public servants, and I really thank them for the work that they're doing during this very difficult time for our community, for our Commonwealth, and for our country. And with that, I am incredibly pleased to introduce our very first guest, Secretary Chapman. Secretary, if you wouldn't mind to please make sure that you're not muted and to take a minute or so to share a little bit more about your role as Acting Secretary of State.
Well, thank you so much, Congresswoman Houlihan, for inviting me today to educate your constituents in advance of the upcoming election. We are 26 days from the election, and my goal as Acting Secretary of State is to ensure that every eligible voter can register to vote, can cast their ballot, and have their vote counted. And that's why I'm here today. Speaking of counting every vote, I know many of you have heard about the Supreme Court case, the United States Supreme Court case, related to undated ballots that was decided this week. I want to make sure that people understand what happened with that, because there's been a lot of misinformation circulating in the media and on social media. The case was very nuanced, and people may have formed assumptions about what happened. What voters need to know is that every county is expected to include undated ballots in their official returns for the November 8th election, consistent with the Department of State's guidance. And I have instructed for counties to count every eligible vote. So a little bit about my background and how I got to be Secretary of State. I have seen elections at work for virtually my entire life when I was a young child. My mother would take me with her each election to watch her cast her ballot in the voting booth. In middle school, I joined a civic organization that registered adults to vote. And after college, I decided to pursue a career as a voting rights attorney. I'm a proud graduate of Howard University School of Law, which has a rich history and legacy in civil and voting rights. I've dedicated my career to ensuring that the people's right to participate in the democratic process of voting is something that is taken seriously. And I have worked in various capacities and from different angles. I've managed election protection hotlines and helped voters in real time. I've litigated voting rights cases and advocated for state and federal legislation, including restoring and modernizing the Voting Rights Act and implementing more national standards for election administration. On January 8th of 2022, Governor Wolf appointed me to serve as acting Secretary of State. In Pennsylvania, the Secretary of State is appointed by the governor and serves as a member of the governor's cabinet and oversees the Pennsylvania Department of State, which promotes the integrity of the electoral process and educate and informs Pennsylvania's 8.7 million voters about the voting process and deadlines. I'll note that as an appointee and not an elected official, it's important that the Secretary of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania serves in a nonpartisan manner. In my role as Chief Election Officer, I emphasize that my duty is not to influence the outcome of elections, but to ensure that there is a fair and secure election and that all eligible Pennsylvanians have access to the ballot. I'm also one of four appointed Secretaries of State who are also Chief Election Officers. Secretaries of State who are their state's chief election officials are in a unique and powerful position to defend democracy by ensuring that the law is followed and voters are informed with accurate information. In Pennsylvania, the Department of State also protects public health and safety through professional licensing, provides the initial infrastructure for economic development by registering corporate organizations and transactions, protects consumers by registering charities, and sanctions the sport of boxing, wrestling, and mixed martial arts. As far as elections are concerned, we have a comprehensive voter information website, which is vote.pa.gov. We also use social media and earned media to spread the word. I also certify statewide races and races for members of the General Assembly and representatives in the federal and state legislatures. I also oversee the use of voting machines and certify each county's voting system. We participate and provide cybersecurity training for our 67 counties. And for example, we recently participated in a tabletop the vote training with the Federal Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. And at the Department of State, we build strong partnerships with local, state, and federal election cybersecurity, homeland security, and law enforcement officials. And we share intelligence and resources and train together. So that's a little bit about what the Department of State does, and I'm happy to answer any additional questions you may have.
Thank you, Secretary. I really appreciate that really good overview where you sit in the government and what your responsibilities are. And also, interestingly, the distinction between what Pennsylvania's Secretary of State is responsible for and what other states might be as well. That's very edifying. Now I'd like, if I could, to introduce our second guest, Karen Barsom, She's the director of voter services right here in Chester County. And again, reminder that there are definitely people likely on this line who are from Berks County, who are also part of the 6th Congressional District. Unfortunately, there is not an equivalent director of voter services right now for Berks County. But Karen, could you please take an opportunity or a moment to share a little bit more about your role and your department here in the 6th Congressional and specifically in Chester County?
Yes, definitely. Thank you for having me. As a volunteer director of voter services, it is to conduct a fair and secure, accurate and impartial election in Chester County by administering and managing Chester County's voting policies, procedures, programs, resources, consistent with state and federal laws. So our department provides residents with the opportunity to register to vote, and provide voters with the opportunity to participate in these secure elections through the methods established by the Pennsylvania legislators, which includes in-person voting, absentee, and mail-in voting, all different voting ways. And we ask everyone to make a plan for the upcoming election to participate in the various methods. Our department, the department that I manage, consists of 27 staff members, but we depend on many other resources from our county and other county departments within Chester County, and especially our poll workers to conduct these elections.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I apologize. I'm trying to make sure that we're back on track. Karen, thank you so much for that introduction. If it's okay, what we'll do, as we typically do with our events, is I'll ask you a couple few questions, actually two, if one for each of you, that are the ones that typically come into us. And I was wondering if you, Karen, could start by sharing with us where the, there are some drop boxes where people are able, this is the season where people are starting to receive their mail-in ballots. We've definitely received some phone calls about that. Karen, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us how to locate where you might be able to drop off your mail-in ballots, and also if you could tell us a little bit about the measures that the county has been taking and implementing to secure the ballots in their locations.
Definitely. So since general election of 2020, we have had and we continue to have 13 drop boxes located across the county. And based on experience of prior elections, we identified a voter education issue with individuals who were sending in mail-in ballots via drop boxes. So a change we made for this election is to have all our drop boxes staffed and we have cameras. We've had cameras at the 24/7 drop boxes and staff at the non-24/7 drop boxes. But this election, there will not be any 24/7 boxes, meaning day and night, and there will not be a drive-through option. The county trains all the drop box staffers to know the rules and regulations so they can accurately vote and keep voting secure. As we approach this election, we are really focusing on the voter education part. We are including a colored flyer with every absentee and mail-in ballot to explain that voters are prohibited from delivering or returning anyone else's ballot. The only exception to this is when a voter with a disability fills out a designated agent form that allows someone else to drop off their ballot. The drop box staffers will verbally state the rules at the drop boxes and will hand out flyers that explain the rules. And any incident of a voter depositing more than one ballot and not having a designated agent form will have an incident report filed with our office voter services and will be referred to the district attorney for review. The drop box program starts on October 25th, and the location and hours are listed on our website at chesco.org/elections.
And so in the meantime, if somebody has received a mail-in ballot, they can drop their mail-in ballot at the post office too, right, or in their mailbox. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, terrific. And also helpful, I actually was on the phone, a Zoom actually, today with a constituent who is disabled and unable to get to a Dropbox location, as an example. She did share that her plan was to give her vote, her mail-in ballot to her post office, her mail person, and that certainly was her plan to vote. But I was interested in hearing that you can designate or authorize by using a form somebody else to take that ballot for you as well. Am I hearing you correctly?
That's correct, yes. It's the designated agent form, which is actually on our website on chessco.org/elections in the form section.
Well, thank you. That's perfect. And Secretary Chapman, for you, again, another very common question that we hear, and that frankly I spend some time on in my role on the Armed Services Committee and the cyber subcommittee that I serve on. A lot of focus is taking place on the security of elections, you know, over the last few years or so. And our community is really relying on this office to make sure that we're, in your office, to make sure that we're a source of really good information and resources. Would you, in the case of Pennsylvania, be able to take a few minutes to explain why in Pennsylvania final tally of votes seem to be frequently delayed or delayed more than it seems like other states are? Why don't we seem to know the results of elections on election night?
Thank you, Congresswoman. It's a very good question and something that we get at the Department of State very often. You know, we ask for voters to please be patient on election day. Because Pennsylvania in our law does not allow counties to start pre-canvassing, which means that county officials can start removing the ballots from their inner and outer envelope until 7 a.m. on election day, results may be delayed. So counties will be working around the clock to tabulate all ballots, but we just really need for voters to be patient and allow them to complete their work. We did have some reform, Act 88, that did make several changes to election administration this year, including providing $45 million to counties and requiring that counties pre-canvass mail ballots starting at 7 a.m. on election day and continuously count mail-in ballots starting at the close of polls. But Act 88 didn't implement the one reform that would have had the biggest impact on allowing Pennsylvania to have results sooner, which is providing for pre-canvassing of mail-in ballots before Election Day. For years, county elections officials, the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania, and Governor Tom Wolf have repeatedly asked the General Assembly to pass meaningful legislation to allow for this practice, which is common in other states. So next month, as with the five most recent elections, the earliest counties can begin pre-canvassing mail-in ballots is 7 a.m. on Election Day. We anticipate that this means that, once again, Pennsylvania will not have unofficial results on Election Day. And we know that everyone wants results on Election Day, but we must again ask for patience. An accurate count of all eligible votes is paramount, and it cannot be rushed. Election workers must be given a reasonable amount of time to do their jobs thoroughly. Unofficial results will be available within a few days, and this delay does not mean anything nefarious is happening. It simply means that the process is working as it's designed to work in Pennsylvania and that election officials are doing their job to count every vote.
Thanks, and I know that it is interesting to watch that other states, you know, have a different process, and that's very helpful to understand and clarify what our process is. And thank you, Secretary, for that. At this point, we're going to turn to audience questions, whether they be online or on the phone. Aubrey, I'm going to turn it back over to you and mute myself, and would love to hear what people are asking.
Hi, Chrissy. We have a group of kind of similar questions. One from a Patricia Boyd, and also similarly from a Sandy Malmed, talking about how can we be assured that the state legislature won't attempt to overturn the results of the election, was Patricia's wording. Sandy, you know, similar with certain candidates who've already indicated, you know, kind of in advance about accepting election results. If somebody, you know, what protections are in place to prevent somebody from overturning the will of the people? and Secretary Chapman, if I may designate that to you, and then Chris, if there's anything you want to add to that as well.
Yeah, I'm happy to take that question. So the way the election process works in Pennsylvania for this election is, you know, the election day is on November 8th. Polls close at 8 p.m. That's also the time that mail-in and absentee ballots must be delivered to each county. As I mentioned, counties start tabulating those votes starting at 8 p.m. on election night, and they'll continue counting until, you know, they're finished. On the Friday after the election, the County Board of Elections meets, you know, they adjudicate provisional ballots, right? Military and overseas ballots take about a week to come in, and so they're counting those. And the counties must certify their election results up to 20 days after the election. So they have 20 days to, you know, make sure every vote is counted, to adjudicate all provisional ballots as well, and they must certify by the 28th of November. Once they certify their results, then I review them and I certify them. So there is no vehicle for the state legislature or the General Assembly to overturn the results. You know, I, in Pennsylvania, the Secretary of State certifies the election results. So people can, you know, feel confident that their vote will be counted and the voice of the people will be heard.
Yes, thank you, Secretary. The only thing that I would add, you know, because I think that this is completely within the purview of the Commonwealth, is back to the first question that you were talking about, Secretary, with regards to patients. I do remember having had a dad in the military that we would, you know, be registered in one state, and my dad would be always mailing a ballot in, or my dad and my mom, frankly, would be doing that. So it is important that we allow for patience on that, too, because every vote does need to be counted. Audrey, thank you for that question. Do we have any other questions?
Yeah. So the next question in the queue, and I apologize, the name is LPC. As someone in the military, and I know Chris is as well, I read that as Lieutenant Colonel. But I'm not sure if that's the case, if that's just someone's initials. But that person wants to know, is there an effort currently in the House to recodify the Voting Rights Act? It seems that a citizen's fundamental right to vote is under attack around the country.
Thanks, Audrey, for that question, and thank you out there for the question, too. And, yes, in fact, that's the beginning of our conversation and my kind of introduction or preamble. We talked a little bit about this. As I mentioned, the new Voting Rights Act, or the kind of renewed Voting Rights Act, is the one that's called the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. You can look it up if you'd like under the number HR4, which stands for House Resolution 4. And it did pass the House of Representatives in August of this, I guess it was actually 2021. And so, importantly, for those of us remembering our Schoolhouse Rock, even though something passes the House, if it doesn't also pass the Senate and get reconciled, it doesn't end up being able to go to the President's desk for signature. I was really proud to be able to vote for this and did vote for this, to be able to protect all Americans from discriminatory voting laws and national discriminatory problems that we were having, and to be able to once again restore the protections that were once guaranteed by the Voting Rights Act. Many people of the generation a little bit older than me remember that of 1965. And over the years, for lots and lots of different reasons, these protections have been kind of eroded and stripped away through different court decisions and a lot of other variables, and it's left a lot of vulnerable state-level efforts that restrict voting rights. So as a specific example, this kind of legislation, the Voting Rights Act, the federal bill, would subject states and local governments that have a history of voter discrimination to federal oversight through updated formulas that will also eliminate the heightened standard that we all have for challenging voter discrimination that was created by the Supreme Court. So I'm hopeful that my colleagues in the Senate will take up this legislation or some version of it, and we'll be able to reconcile it together with one another. It was really very cool to be able to serve alongside Representative Lewis in Congress before he passed away in 2020. And this bill to restore and strengthen the original Voting Rights Act really honors his legacy in a very special way. And thank you so much for the question. I will turn it back over to Aubrey to see if there's more.
Yes. So the next question that we got in our queue was from Angel in Kennett Square. And Karen, this seems like it would be an appropriate question for you. So Angel wants to know who decides exactly where those drop boxes are located, maybe what the process is there.
So we have them located at 13 different libraries across the county, and they are all listed with their addresses on our website, which is jesco.org/elections. And the process would be you will bring your ballot envelope, everything packed already at home. You know, make sure you read the instructions to put your ballot in the secrecy envelope, seal it, insert it in your declaration envelope, seal it, and fill out all the appropriate sections on that envelope. And then you can bring it to a drop box location. When you come to a drop box location, make sure you only bring your own ballot unless you have one with a designated agent form that was made out to you as the designated agent, and you will walk up to the box and you will be able to deposit your ballot envelope into that drop box.
Thank you so much for that answer. There is, again, a reminder for those who might be on the phone from Berks, a different process in Berks. And we will, at the end of this call and when we post this online, make sure that we include the information that we have on drop boxes and their locations for Berks County.
Great.
Aubrey, any further questions?
Yes. And so we have got more questions from online, but I do want to go to some of our live callers. And so it looks like we have Darren from Phoenixville. You should now be live on the line.
Hey, Congresswoman, and hey, Ms. Barstam. I have a question about Chester County and whether they're going to be curing ballots that come in by mail this year that are somehow flawed or have an error that can easily be fixed by the voter.
Yes, thank you for that question. As that currently is a subject in litigation and in the courts, that is not something that we have made a final decision on. It all depends on what the courts will tell us to do when that time comes. So as soon as the courts make a more specific decision, we will contact, you know, we will talk to our solicitors and follow their advice.
And Secretary, is there anything going on at the Commonwealth level on that, or is that ruling a Chester County issue, and will it be a timely decision for the election that's upcoming, or will that be something for further elections?
Well, the Department of State and the administration, you know, we support ballot curing. We support the voter's ability to cure, you know, minor deficiencies or mistakes that a voter might make. So forgetting to put a signature on a ballot, for example. But there is litigation. There's an RNC versus Chapman case, and so we're waiting on the outcome of that from the state Supreme Court.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. And Aubrey, are there further questions?
There are, and thank you, Darren. I'm going to remove you from the queue now. And so to continue on with our online questions, it looks like we have Nathan on the line, also from Phoenixville, very engaged community there. So Nathan, you should now be live.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for taking my question. I'm calling from Phoenixville, which, as you know, is in Chester County, but I have a question about a policy that I recently read a news report about that's happening in Berks County. It was a concerning report in the Reading Eagle about a plan, where I understand there's no director of voter services, about a plan to station armed officers at voting drop boxes around the county and to have them question voters as they come to drop off their ballots. I believe there is a law in the Commonwealth that says police should not be stationed within 100 feet of a polling place. And I wonder if there's anything that the state can do to intervene in the implementation of this policy. It really smacks of voter intimidation to me.
Secretary Chapman, are you able to comment on that?
Yes, I can answer that. So the Department of State is aware of that plan in Berks County. Actually, when we were first made aware in September, you know, I sent a letter to the sheriff of Berks County addressing my concerns with the potential for voter intimidation. How it was reported to us is that sheriffs would be questioning voters as they return their ballots off at drop boxes about whether or not they're returning their own ballot. As you know, the law in Pennsylvania is that voters can only return their own ballot unless, you know, they have a designated agent form. And so we're just concerned about, you know, the mere presence of law enforcement at drop boxes can amount to voter intimidation. You know, we've seen previous cases around this, you know, whether those officers are in uniform or if they're in plain clothes. So I have sent that letter, and we're waiting to see what the outcome of the decision from Berks County is, but it's something that we are monitoring.
Thank you, Secretary. Is there, Aubrey, further questions out there? Yes, we have another online question, and thank you, Nathan. I just put you out of the queue. Our next question comes from a Robert. Robert, you should now be live.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
So last year, I'm from Chester County, and last year I was away on business and I had to use a mail-in ballot. This year, I was mailed a mail-in ballot, never requested it, and at the same time it came in the mail about a week or so before, my wife was told that by a mail from your office that she never voted in 2020. Now, I know for a fact my wife went in person and voted, and I did not request a mail-in ballot. So what is the problem?
Karen, would you be able to possibly help? And if for some reason, Robert, we, you know, with your specific case, we obviously might be needing to go a little bit deeper on this, but is there some kind of thing that might be going on with sort of auto renewal for mail-in ballots that you might be able to talk to?
Yes, definitely. I can talk about the two specific scenarios he's talking about in general, and if there is anything that we can do to address his personal matters, then of course we can take this information or receive that through your office. So one is the 2020 voter credit. There has been some mailers going around. We are not certain the entity of it. But has informing people that that a ballot might not have been counted in 2020 as they take that data off of the voter credits in the uniforms voter system from the state, which comes from scanning and poll books. We are reassuring the voters that if you physically went to the poll and inserted your ballot into the tabulator, your vote was counted in the presidential general 2020 election. Tabulating ballots and giving voter credits into the voter registration system are two total different things. The voter credit doesn't have anything to do if your ballot runs in a tabulator or not, or was tabulated. If you went to the poll and you put your ballot into the tabulator, that vote was tabulated and included into the count. So that's a part of his question. The other part that the gentleman probably is referring to is that Pennsylvania has a permanent status on people's voting records. Permanent status, however, really is a reminder system that once every year you receive an application in the end of January, beginning of February. And if you do fill out that application in the beginning of the year, you will be all automatically put in the queue to receive a ballot for all elections in that election year for which you are eligible. So if the gentleman once filled out an application somewhere during that particular election year, he would have received all ballots for that election year. If he does want to remove himself of that program, there is a special form for that on our website, chesco.org/elections in the forms section.
So Karen, just so that I'm making sure I understand what the first part of your answer was, are you saying that there were letters that came out to people and they didn't come from you? And who did they come from?
We are not certain. We don't know who's behind the organization.
But that you not only believe, but you are telling us that if a person went and voted in person, that their vote is counted. Is there a way that they can validate that for themselves?
So we have received phone calls of individuals, and then we personally would have went back into the poll book and looked at the personal scenarios. So we are more than willing to do that for this individual.
And so the other part of the answer, so I'm making sure I understand, is that if you have registered to get a mail-in ballot during a calendar year, that you are automatically going to get a mail-in ballot for whatever other elections are in that calendar year?
That is correct. If you do mark, and there is a section number 7, there is a little box that if people indeed mark that off, that little box automatically will put another ballot in the queue for the general election. So if people actually are surprised now this week, for example, when ballots went out, that there's one in their mailbox, that is because they would be on this permanent status. Now, if they don't want that in the future, I would recommend indeed filling out the paperwork to be removed of that permanent status. But there are definitely people this week that are going to be surprised to get a ballot in the mail because they actually filled that out earlier this year.
And if, Karen, somebody wants to instead vote in person and they did receive a mail-in ballot, but they, know they're going to be in town and they didn't expect they would be or they didn't want a mail-in ballot, can they still vote in person?
Yes, that is possible. If you actually do want to go to the polling place, you are asked to bring your ballot and declaration envelope. And the declaration envelope is the outer envelope that has your name and address and barcode on it. So in order to be able to vote at the poll, you would need to give those items back to the judge of elections at your polling place to surrender it, to be spoiled. And then you will be able to, after you complete some paperwork and spoil your ballot through the judge, you will be able to receive a regular ballot and sign the poll book and vote and utilize the regular the tabulator at the polling place.
And Secretary, I'm not sure if this is the right question for you or for perhaps the Attorney General, but it sounds like this thing that Robert's talking about it might be a scam. Is there something that's being done about these kinds of things? And maybe you're not the right person to ask this question of, but I thought I would ask anyhow.
I'm not familiar with this particular scenario, but, if any voter has questions or if you receive mailings that you're not sure, the legitimacy of it, you can always call our hotline, which is 1-877-VOTE-PA. Votes PA, I'm sorry, 1-877-VOTES-PA.
Thank you. And I appreciate the question very much so from Robert. The next question, if we have any, Aubrey?
Yes, and just before I remove Robert from the queue, I just wanted to say that I see you down as a 610-883 number. So, Robert, we can share that with the Chester County team, or if you would want to reach out, we'll make sure you get all squared away there. So we do have about a dozen more questions. So for those of you who missed the beginning of the call, again, if we are not able to answer your question, we will give you a call back in the coming days as long as you've provided the appropriate information to help us get your contact information. So the next question we've got is straightforward. So Khadija in Westchester wants to know why Election Day isn't a federal holiday.
Hi, Khadija. I can try to answer this question. It's obviously not a federal holiday, and for lots of different reasons, it's on Tuesdays, and it also across the country, different states have different hours, and of course across the country, different states have, as we talked about, different requirements and rules. But for lots of different reasons, it is on a Tuesday, and there is movement, including in some of the legislation that has been passed recently, to make voting and the day that we vote a holiday. And I personally am a person who has voted for that because I give the example pretty regularly of my brother who lives in a pretty remote part of Iowa, who works as a nurse regularly 12-hour shifts and sometimes double shifts, and his commute to his hospital is not any shorter than an hour each time. And so in his case, were he to be in Pennsylvania as an example, thankfully he now has the opportunity to vote by mail, but in a place, in a state that didn't necessarily have that opportunity, he would not be able to vote. There would be no time zone or that he could be participating in voting. And so this is why there's a movement to make sure that people have all the different opportunities that are possible to be able to vote. And one such idea is to make this a federal holiday. And there are many, many other ideas like this. So it is not now. It is something that has been considered. It's something that I have voted for. And stay tuned for more information on that. Aubrey, any other questions?
Next, I want to go to an online question submitted by Mary Ann Good. And Marianne wants to know whether the provisional ballots are counted on election night within each precinct or after the fact during a recount if the election is close and a candidate specifically asks for a recount. So Karen or Secretary Chapman, if I could get that over to you. Maybe Karen first, if you could address that within Chester County.
Definitely, and that's a great question, and I'm very glad I can clarify some of these things today. So provisionals that are completed at the poll are not able to be reviewed at the poll because not all the information is at the polling place to be able to do that. And as per the election code, that is something that actually officially takes place when the return board meets, and that actually happens starting on Friday after the election, no later than 9 a.m. So on Friday after the election, we actually are going to research every provisional ballot envelope one by one. So we are actually making sure that this particular voter is registered in Chester County and is actually of that precinct, did not vote in any other methods, because by that time we processed all the absentee mail-in ballots. And if we found that this person did not participate in any other ways and is an eligible registered Chester County voter, then we can proceed further and make that part of tabulation. This is every time done. This is not something just being done if a race is closed, which that is a misconception. So always, all provisionals are being researched and are being part of the count. As the acting secretary stated, the certification is November 28th for this election. So before the finalization of the election and the certification, those that are eligible are all included.
So can I ask a clarifying question there, Karen? And maybe Secretary Lee as well. I'm sorry, Lee too. Going back to Robert's question, I have in my hand a mail-in ballot. I don't want to use it anymore. I want to go in and vote in person because I want my vote to be counted, right away. Is my vote therefore a provisional ballot, or is my vote a regular ballot in that case?
I don't want to take it away from the secretary, so
answer. Sure. Secretary Chapman, maybe you could help me with that question.
Sure, of course. So in that instance, if someone, as Karen mentioned, brings their mail-in ballot with the declaration envelope, hands it to the poll worker who then spoils that ballot, they can vote a regular ballot, on the election system. If, say, someone goes and they don't have the their mail-in ballot with them, with the envelope, then they would have to vote a provisional ballot.
Got it. Got it. Great. And Secretary, do you have any further things to answer about precinct counting and where ballots are counted? And I think I heard Friday at 9 a.m. is also an important time as well. Any further comments on this question before we move on to the other?
Karen explained it very well that, you know, every canvas board and the 67 counties across the Commonwealth are meeting on that Friday to count provisional ballots, adjudicate, you know, other ballots that they may have set aside for various reasons. So it's public, it's transparent, you know, it's bipartisan. There's authorized representatives from both political parties that are able to witness this, you know. So I think that's one thing that's really important is all this is done in a very transparent process for the public to see which votes are counted and which ones aren't and what the reasons are.
Can I also, before we move to the next questions, ask, when you say it's transparent and public, does that mean that anybody can come, or does that mean that representatives of people can or organizations can come?
Yeah, it's really has to be an authorized representative, but some counties choose to film their meeting. So it varies per county, but it's usually just authorized representatives from political parties and the candidates can attend.
Great, thank you. Aubrey, what is our next question?
Thank you, Chrissy. Our next question comes from Michael. And Michael wants to know whether or not there are circumstances where the state election law can be changed by a state institution, including the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And so I'll repeat that again, and Secretary Chapman, this might be for you. Is there any circumstance where the state election law or laws can be changed by a state institution, including the Pennsylvania Supreme Court?
So, you know, in Pennsylvania, we have the election code, which are the statutes that govern our election system in Pennsylvania. You know, there's going to be litigation based on the provisions in the election code. You know, there can be disputes and parties can bring litigation. The state can bring litigation. Any aggrieved party, whoever, I can bring litigation. Voters can bring litigation. And, you know, that's when the courts decide. So, you know, although we have the election code, we also have court cases and court opinions that also set election law in Pennsylvania. So, you know, when you're looking at the election law, you have to look at the statutes, the election code, as well as court decisions as well.
Thank you. Aubrey, any further questions?
Yes. So our next question comes from Paul Kelly, and it looks like this might be a question for you, Karen. And so Paul wants to know, when was the last time the voter rolls in Chester County were audited? So again, from Paul, when was the last time the voter rolls in Chester County were audited?
So Chester County participates every summer, every year, in the programs that are established by the Department of State for various different transactions, right? One would be anyone that potentially moves out of the county. We would receive the matchup of the United States Postal Service records, and we would send those individuals the postcards to affirm their you know, where they are and all of that. Also, people who are potentially not participating in the elections for several election years, which is 5 years, we would send them a postcard and make sure that we still know where they are, and they have to contact us, and they have to affirm with us that they are still voters of Chester County. So every summer, we are participating in all the different programs, and we did participate in that this year as well. So anyone that did receive a postcard over the summer and that's communicated with us, our poll books are updated to reflect that. Some might have moved and solely removed without our poll books. Some might have moved within the county or going to another county in the state of Pennsylvania. So all these things were done this year as well. If someone did not respond to us, they become an inactive voter, meaning you still can go to the poll. However, you will have to affirm at the poll through an affirmation first before you can get a ballot who you are and where you live and so on. So there is paperwork for those voters before they will be given an actual ballot.
Thank you. That's very, very interesting. So I learn something new every day. And so just to clarify as well, when you said working with state, it sounded like you also meant the State Department, Federal State Department as well, or just the Commonwealth State Department?
So Department of State. I'm sure the Secretary can answer because they also participate with other entities. And that comes from them again to us. So maybe the secretary can clarify maybe some other programs that they adhere by.
Sure. The other program that we participate in is called ERIC, E-R-I-C, and we're one of 30 states that are members of ERIC, and it provides us with data as far as, you know, voters who have moved, and we provide that data to counties so they can conduct their list maintenance procedures.
Thank you. That's also really informative and helpful. Aubrey, I think that you had mentioned that that might be our last the last opportunity that we have for questions before we move on to final remarks for me, though. I was hoping that I might be able to ask the Secretary and Karen to once again just briefly give us websites or places where we can get information from so that people can write that down. And once again, we'll be providing an audio of this and make sure that we also provide written websites too. But would you mind, Secretary, first reminding us any statewide websites and then Karen, any Chester County specific ones?
Before I do that, I just wanted to remind everyone of some deadlines. So October 24th is our voter registration deadline here in Pennsylvania. So you can make changes to your registration. You can update your registration by October 24th. November 1st is the deadline to request a mail-in or absentee ballot if you desire to do so. And the deadline to do that is by 5 p.m. on November 1st. If you have any questions about how to vote in Pennsylvania, you can call our hotline, which is 1-877-VOTES-PA, 1-877-VOTES-PA. And we have a comprehensive website that has election information. It's vote.pa.gov, vote.pa.gov. And we also encourage you to follow us on our Twitter and our Facebook as well. We're constantly providing information that voters should know about how to cast their ballot in Pennsylvania. We also answer frequently asked questions as well. So please follow us on social media. That's the Pennsylvania Department of State.
Thank you. Thank you. And Karen, again, the Director of Voter Services for Chester County, if you wouldn't mind kind of giving us the same lay of the land, and again, reminder for those on the phone from Berks, unfortunately, there is no equivalent for Karen right now, or Karen, Director Barson, and hopefully we will be able to continue to get you that information as well. Over to you, Karen.
Yeah, thank you. Our website is chesco.org/elections, and on that website we have lots of information for Chester County, the Dropbox programs, the locations for that, the satellite offices, forms, and paperwork. We also have a Facebook page where we share information. And I do want to especially point out on our website, directly when you go to chesco.org/elections, there are easy buttons, especially for this election, to be able to navigate through where do I go to vote, where is my polling place, and so on. And one button in specific, if you click on it, you will be guided to a web page with a lot of specific videos for Chester County, so you actually can see how we do things in Chester County with our staff, with the team, with the equipment we have. So it's very, very helpful to actually have a little bit of a behind the scenes of our department and learn more about what we do on a daily basis to get everything ready for Election Day and conduct the election and the aftermath up to certification.
That's perfect. That's very helpful. And we will as well, you know, provide the information websites and those sorts of things from Berks. And again, I very much appreciate you both joining us. But before I thank you formally in my closing remarks, I do want to mention that we've run up against time right now. There are some questions that we were not able to get to that we very much want to make sure we get back to you. Our office is committed to doing that within 48 hours or two business days of that. Some people also have only provided their first name. So if you didn't get your answer, your question answered, please do follow up with our office tomorrow, because we won't otherwise be able to contact you. And with that, I would like it, if it would be okay, just to sort of summarize a little bit by saying thank you to everyone who tuned in this evening. It's really clear that with your questions and your engagement that you care very much about our Republic, and I, of course, join you in that passion. It's really, really important that members of our community know how to safely and securely cast our ballots, and I hope that you also will share with me in my deep appreciation for Pennsylvanians like Secretary Chapman and Director Barsom, who are working so diligently to make sure that this very fundamental constitutional right of ours is accessible to every eligible voter. With that, I will say thank you. If you have any additional questions, you can reach out to Chester County Voting Services, as we mentioned, at chesco.org, www.chesco.org. I'll give you very briefly some information that I've just been handed on from Berks, and I will also make sure this is online as well. 610-478-6490 for Berks, or their website is www.co.berks.pa.us. And with that, I thank you all. Please be well, and I'll talk to you soon and see you around our neighborhood.